Hi, this is Mike.
Greetings from Dave.
And greetings from Matt. And you're listening to the Empty Spiral podcast. This is the official podcast of the Lacuna Core community. We are episode 160. And we might be talking about a song that we still can't agree on how to pronounce all these years later. We think it might be Aeon, but it might be Eon, or it might be Aeon, if your name's Dave. I'm not quite sure. We'll come on to that in a little while and we can debate pronunciations. How are you guys? Dave, how you been?
Good. One thing that I've been peer pressured into recently.
Oh, go on.
Is watching Baby Reindeer.
Oh, because yes, the Netflix show.
Basically everybody in the world, and certainly everyone we know, is, oh, you've got to watch this.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it's worse because obviously Red, my daughter, has said, no, you sit down and watch it. And she's been saying about this since it came out. So, yeah, we'll get around to it one day when we're ready. So we actually sat down, pretty much binge watched the whole thing in one go.
It's not about a reindeer, is it? It's nothing to do with Bambi.
No, it is not Bambi at all. It is intense.
Really? Okay.
It was fairly traumatic. I mean, absolutely fascinating. It was a brilliant piece of TV.
Wow.
I come away thinking, wow, that was heavy.
Wow. I've seen so many people talking about it and saying it's really obvious who the comedian is, but it's not to me. So did you come away understanding who it was referring to in real life?
No, I mean, I don't know. I live in a cave, pretty much. I don't do current affairs, so I don't know. I don't know what's going on in the world, really.
Fair enough. Okay.
I treated it as a standalone. I don't really know anything about any of the characters or connections to reality,
sure,
or anything like that. I took it as it was.
And you enjoyed it, by the sounds of things?
Yes, yeah, no, I thought it was very, very good. I don't know, because I sat through the whole thing being traumatized, basically. But it was fascinating.
I might have to add it onto my list of things to watch. Mm-hmm. Very good, very good. How about you, Mike? What have you been watching recently, since we've got onto the subject of what we've been watching, or Netflix or whatever?
So for years, I've been watching somebody on YouTube, a travel vlogger called Bald and Bankrupt. And he goes to, he used to specialize in all the Soviet republics, going around there.
All right.
Until he was banned from, he was arrested and banned from Russia. He's been expelled from there for 3 years. But he still goes around various places. So the most recent episode, I think he was in Uzbekistan or somewhere, like going around there. So he does different episodes. And I've also now picked up on another vlogger that he's French, and he's cycled from Paris, and he's going from Paris all the way to Johannesburg on one of those sit down bikes.
Bloody hell!
So he's been doing it 2 years. He's been doing it so far, and he's only halfway down Africa. And there's certain places where obviously you can't go because it's too dangerous. So
because there was a guy recently who finished his tour, didn't he? And he'd been arrested a couple of times. Wasn't he a runner, as I recall? It felt like a bit like a Forrest Gump thing, and he'd gone down through Africa.
Yeah,
what was his name? English guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, that guy did the East Coast, I think. No, the West Coast, sorry, and got into a lot of trouble. This guy is literally going down on the East Coast, but there's still a lot of areas of Africa where you can't either get a visa to get into or you just can't go. But that's very interesting as well. I like seeing that, things like that. Different parts of the world that people walk around and experience.
You know what to add on to your hit list on your travel itinerary, or where to avoid?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I'd love to go to lots of the Middle East, but you can't.
I randomly watched a video recently of a guy that went to, is it Myanmar, what used to be Burma?
Yeah.
And really fascinating, because, you know, technically they're at war at the moment, right?
There's
a civil war in Myanmar. Mm. And he went to, I know it was Rangoon or I think it was Rangoon rather than Mandalay. And it was really interesting because for tourists, it's really cheap, but like five-star everywhere. He stayed in this five-star hotel, which was absolutely gorgeous. It was probably like three other people staying there, kind of thing. And the roads are completely empty. And he said the only reason he knew there was a war on, because he'd heard about it from foreign media. You know, there was nothing there in the city that showed that there was a war on in this country. absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
I do have a lot of respect for these kind of people that their lives, I mean, the fact that you said he was bankrupt and bald tells me two things about him. And I'm guessing he's bankrupt is because he spends all of his time going from country to country. Or maybe he's been faced by tax collectors. Who knows? What
he's from Brighton originally. Bald. Oh, right, okay. Bald. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I love with bald and bankrupt, I've been following him for quite a few years, and all the ex-Soviet republics going there because he speaks fluent Russian.
Right.
It makes it absolutely easy.
Why has he been banned from Russia? Because he tells the truth, or?
It is basically because I think people in the administration saw that he was had a YouTube channel going around the republics, and he had a curly finger and put in a police car in Moscow and spent a week in a prison because they don't like him. Don't like him having a YouTube channel showing the republics in Russia.
Oh, showing that they're quite happy no longer being an extension of Russia, basically, living there.
I assume so. So, out of mind.
Well, let's not get too political, I suppose. What am I watching at the moment? I am a big Dune fan. So as soon as Dune 2 was available on streaming, so here's a little bit of a story for you. We've had a 37-inch flat screen TV in our living room. We don't have a big living room. I think Mike, you stay with me once. It's not a big room, small room. Mm-hmm. And we've had one for years, and it's perfectly serviceable, smart TV, flat screen. And my wife went, "I want a bigger TV." And I went, "Really?" And she went, "I've spent a lot of time watching TV. I want a bigger TV." So we measured it up, and I think we got a 50-inch flat screen.
Wow.
TV, something like that. Mm-hmm. Which I put onto the wall, you can move it around and stuff. And it's huge. It takes up the entire space, okay? It's I know you get used to these things, but it is like having a black hole in the corner of my room that if you get too close, you get sucked into because this is a big thing. Anyway, watching TV is now much more of a cinematic experience. And the day I got it was the day that Dune 2 came out for streaming, even though it was still on at the cinema. So I thought, I'll treat myself. Yes, it is a digital download. Yes, I'm going to regret it later, but I'll spend the £20 to buy it and be able to watch it. And I did that. And I probably watched it about three or four times now on my big TV. So I've been watching Dune 2 a lot, and Dune 1 and Dune 2 and then Dune 1 and then Dune 2. I'm a real big fan of the books, of the recent films, not so much the David Lynch stuff from 84. I take it or leave it, although I do have it on DVD. I've been watching that quite a lot.
I love it. I've seen it three times.
One thing I've noticed is that I don't go onto the Facebook groups for Dune because it's just filled with toxicity about what they don't like about it. There's nothing about what's good about it, which is just so many good things about it. It's all about, it's not like this, and he misses that, and he excludes that. Yeah, I've got my own issues with certain parts of it. But I think something doesn't have to be perfection for you to really love it.
It's the soundtrack for me.
Hans Zimmer, isn't it? I mean, what's not to love? Yeah. So big fan of Dune and Dune 2. So I've been watching that again recently. And then the other thing I watched, this is a bit of a flashback. I watched Excalibur recently. Remember the old classic 1980s? That is a great film. Okay. I reckon I haven't watched that for 20 years, but I recently I got it really cheap in, oh, I can't remember what it was. It was a store in London, and they had two for the price of one on Blu-rays. Mm. Or was it DVD? I can't remember. I think it's Blu-ray. And I got it, and it's got the director's commentary on it, which is really fascinating. You got the music, which is amazing. Lots of shiny armor, lots of cheesy special effects. But I have to say, it stands up. It really just stands up as a great 1980s movie. And of course, other than the Sword and the Stone, and of course the BBC TV Merlin, we haven't had a lot of Arthurian films. And I'm waiting for a director to go, wait a minute, why aren't we doing a Sword in the Stone series on Netflix? Why haven't we gone back to, Mort d'Arthur and do that? Because there's so much great epic story in those original stories that no one's really picking up on. Anyway, there you go. I don't know why I'm talking about that. That just sort of give you a view of my view on it, on what I'm watching. And if anybody's listening, I don't know what you need to do, but go and make a Arthurian legend show on Amazon. No, not on Amazon. They'll probably put Muppets in it or something. Or I'm sorry, a bit on Apple TV, which I've got a lot of time for. There we go. Or come out with a film, a trilogy of films or something. Right, anyway, let's talk about Lacuna Coil. So we I recently added on the Empty Spiral Discord server a collectibles channel. Because I realised that was a bit of a miss for us fellow fans to not be talking and sharing our collections of Lacuna Coil stuff that we have gathered over the years. And of course, when you talk about collectibles, you've got limited edition items and not so limited edition items. So whether you've got all the albums or whether or not you've got posters from shows, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The myriad of quirky merchandise that's come out over the years. But then there's also some of the unique things. And we talked in the last podcast, of course, about drum heads. I know it's a sore subject, Dave. We won't reflect too much on it. but, you know, they're by definition a collectible, a unique part of Lacuna Coil lore, heritage, whatever you want to call it. And I think the three of us have been fans for long enough with probably varying degrees of desire to collect certain artifacts from Lacuna Coil. So I thought we'd make a really interesting discussion if we talked about what our favourite things that we have and what things we wish we could get. And just sort of the general state of affairs on collecting stuff, Lacuna Coil stuff. So I'll start with a simple question. Actually, this is probably the hardest question, actually. When you look at your own collection of stuff, whether it's music or memorabilia or merchandise, do you have a favourite thing? For all these years of being Lacuna Coil fans, what's your favourite thing? And if you can't think of one, give me three, but no more than three. All right. What are your favourite? So, Dave, give me your favourite things that you have that are Lacuna Coil related. When I say give it to me, I mean tell me. I don't
actually. You can't have it. It's mine. It's mine, damn it. Yeah, that is an unanswerable question, really.
Well, have so, at least try to.
Well, I'm going to say a carrier bag from.
Right.
It must have been 2006. It was on the Karma Code era tour.
Is it the black one?
Yeah. They actually started giving your merch in a Lacuna Coil branded carrier bag. And that was fantastic. I love the.
Not necessarily good for the climate, but we didn't know that back then. Or care as much as we do now, maybe. I don't know.
No, but it was quirky. It was, as far as I know, never been repeated. Was it just that one tour?
I think so.
I don't know about worldwide, whether it was everywhere or just a European thing. I'm not sure.
I still got one of them somewhere. Because you had the Karma Code and it had the numbers and the bar.
Okay. So I just really like that. It's something completely different. And it's pinned up with pride, that is. Like a poster. Okay.
A carrier. That was not the answer I was expecting. I don't know what I was expecting, but a carrier bag wasn't one of them. And I'm sure the band will be pleased to know that of all the time and money they've invested in merchandise over the years, your favourite thing is the carrier bag. It's like a cat, you know, like all my kids, you buy them a Christmas present and the first thing they do would be jump in the box and play with the box that you with the Christmas present was in. Yeah. That's that kind of thing. All right, what about you, Mike?
Packaging is important.
Packaging is important, apparently. I just imagine now that Dave's got a stack load of Amazon boxes just that he makes forts out of now and plays inside them.
Sorry, what's wrong with that?
No. Nothing at all.
Nothing if you're 12.
Whoa. I touched the nerve there. Okay, what about you, Mike? What's your favourite collectible, if you have one?
I have, I would say three. I guess a collection of drumsticks from over the years.
Yeah.
That I have, various.
So those drumsticks, I want to ask you a question, because there's some things that represent memories, right?
Yeah.
I've got some drumsticks that have been given to me. Mm-hmm. I'm shit at catching anyway. Yeah. I can catch a cricket ball. I used to play cricket at school, but used to be really good at catching. Mm. Catch a drumstick? Nah. It's like trying to deflect an Exocet missile. I'm more likely to go, wah, get it out of my way. I don't want to get hit in the head by a drumstick. So I
if
never
I can
really
just stop it. stop you there for a second, because an admission with being shit at catching, especially drumsticks. I was at an extreme gig in 2008.
Yep.
And I wasn't paying attention. It was the end of the set, and I was kind of, I suppose, watching the band leave the stage. What I didn't notice was the drummer who'd come up to the front with his sticks, throwing them out to the crowd. He looked at me, lobbed one, smacked me straight in the face. And so the worst thing is somebody else, it bounced off.
I was going to say,
somebody else caught it.
Oh, so deflecting off Dave's scalp. And you, did you end up with a bruise or a bloody nose or anything like that? Was that?
No, thankfully I'm resilient enough that it didn't leave a mark. You think it's my pride.
There's just reflect on the moment, folks. There's someone out there who saw a guy get planted in the face with a stick and thought, I'm going to have that. And didn't even go, mate, you deserve this. You know, you nearly end up in hospital with a stick sticking into your nose or whatever. And they didn't even give you the option to take it. That's outrageous. That's outrageous. Rude. Anyway, my question for that's fine. Anecdotes are why we're here. I've got some sticks that have been given to me in the most part, used sticks, usually because I'm so terrible at them. You know, whether it was Ryan or Richard or Chicho would kind of go, have a stick, you deserve it, right? You know, you keep missing out of sticks, and they're bad sticks and stuff. And some of them are very generic. Other ones have got the Kunicore logos on, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
blah,
yeah.
Right of sticks. But if you asked me today where those sticks came from, I would not remember at all. So they have very little intrinsic nostalgic value to me, these sticks. They're just there in my collection.
Yeah.
How is it for you? Do you remember where these sticks come from?
I did label them at one point of where I caught them all from. So, but it's one of those things. I've got them, but yeah. I mean, I'll move on. That one of the other things is the Godfather work shirt.
Because it's a classic. Yeah.
Because it was only available in the US very briefly, and then it got pulled off sale. And it took me 8 years to find that on eBay, and I got one that perfectly fits. So that is as rare as a lot of things.
Yeah.
If
it fits better than the Karma Code one ever did, that's for certain. I mean, that was made for toddlers. Yeah, yeah. Ridiculous. Yeah. I got an XL in that, and it didn't go around my leg. Anyway, that's another.
The new work shirt fits very well. It's a Dickies shirt, so if they have them on the UK tour.
What's the new one? I haven't seen that one.
It's with the white Comalized XX. That's on the back of it.
Oh, do you know, I've completely missed that. Because the Godfather's one is a Dickies work shirt, I'm pretty sure, isn't it?
Yeah, but this new one is...
JSA, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, but I think from this latest tour, I think the one I have from last year, I think that this is a different variant with another pocket on the front. I think they've changed the design slightly, but it's a very, very good fit.
I still have the one that I got. I managed to get that. I didn't even need to go to eBay. I think I got it from like a JSA website 15 years ago, which was the Godfather's one.
Yeah.
I think I might have felt a few pounds since then, so it might be a little bit tight around the tummy. But that's on me rather than the shirt. And that's definitely hanging up somewhere. Because you're right. I went for a period where I would stop wearing T-shirts to shows and would wear shirts.
Yeah, yeah.
Black shirts generally. Because I do love a black shirt. And I think that really, you know, it was one of those things that I enjoyed wearing a work shirt. And there were a couple of times at shows where people will go, oh, yeah, that's a really good shirt you've got. Because, you know, the Godfather's logo. I get it. Okay, that's number two. What's your third?
Third, I would just say generically older shirts. So I have an Infinite Mother shirt that's on the front of an old lady that's from maybe the Inner Every era, because I got a long sleeve Inner Every shirt at the same time, and that was back in the day when Sanctuary Media used to have their own Lacuna Call section on the website in the shop, and they used to sell bucket loads of the stuff, and that for me is nostalgic more than anything. That I've got a number of shirts that the mother one, certainly I've never seen anyone have it, wear it at any shows.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, but could be one.
Have you kept all the shirts you've ever bought?
Yeah, of course I have.
No, it's just there's quite a few of mine that I've literally worn to death and they've become so bedraggled. So, you know, thousand wash grey, holes in them, a little bit shredded on the sleeves if you've got them. And there's a couple that I throw away, regrettably, now. But a lot of the others weren't wearable at all. So that's when I got, you know, made them into blankets and cushions.
I've got lots of shirts like that, the Kunikos shirts. I mean, I think when it comes to shirts, so when I say shirts, I mean, you know, T-shirts, right?
Yeah.
I rarely buy shirts from other bands, to be fair. You know, there aren't that many bands that I want to have a shirt for. Finding a shirt in my wardrobe is impossible because it's basically about 100 black shirts, right? Black T-shirts.
Yeah,
and I every so often I go through and fold them up and put them in, but then 2 days later, they're just a big pile of a big, you know, combined globular black fabric that I have to go, nope. Because, you know, they're like shirts that, yeah, I want to wear this shirt today or, you know, whatever. I think, I don't know how many Lacuna Core shirts I have. I think I stopped counting at about 80.
Yeah, same, I would think.
But the vast majority of them now are in one of those vacuum sealed bags, you know, where you get it over and you kind of suck it down. And they're in the loft because they're old. Or they're not comfortable or whatever, and they're just packed away. But I don't think I could get rid of them.
No, never.
I don't think I could get rid of them. And to be fair, there are some shirts which now need to go into that bag because, like you said, Dave, they're in a kind of state of disarray and they're grey, etc. It's the same with hoodies. I love a hoodie anyway, right? You know, you can tell when it's really hot for me is when I'm stopped wearing a hoodie because I will wear a hoodie pretty much all year round. And there are some Lacuna Core hoodies which are grey. So yeah, I totally know where you're coming from there. But I like it, KSA shirts. I don't have that many really, really old shirts. But I just don't. When I first started going to Lacuna Core shows, I couldn't afford to buy the shirts.
Yeah.
So it was a case of missed out on a lot of opportunities. It was only a few years later that I could find I could afford to get a shirt per tour. I like tour shirts.
Yeah, I've doubled up now on tour shirts. So you don't wear them out. And it's probably a weird thing to do to buy two shirts the same, but
no, I don't think it is. It's a couple of times I've bought two shirts. I bought two shirts at the Chrome Allies event. I've bought.
Yeah.
I might even have three.
I've got three, I think.
When they redid the Unleashed Memory shirt back in 2018 or whenever it was, I bought three of them because I love that album and I love the cover and it works really well as a shirt. So I make sure I've got a few of them. So they grey. So they slowly go grey, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
I asked this question about favorite collectibles and I really struggle to answer this one because I've got, at the risk of sounding arrogant, I've got so much stuff that I've collected over the years. You know, let me give you a top three. And this is today, Matt's today's top three. Number one, Lacuna Core tie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. I love that tie. I've got two of them, but one of them's got dirty on the front. And I tried dry cleaning it. It went horribly wrong. So I've effectively got one tie, black tie with the white Lacuna Core logo woven in at the bottom. I've worn it to work many times in the past. I've worn it at events. I wore it at a funeral once. Not quite sure how it went down, but I was wearing black. What are you going to do? It feels like, I don't know, it's something quality about it, if you know what I mean. You could wear it with a work shirt as well. So I've literally worn the Godfathers. In fact, when we did the 119 show, I was wearing the Godfathers work shirt with the tie. And it was like, it felt like a Lacuna Core uniform. So
management.
I was the management. You're you. Get out. I really like the work shirt and I really like the tie combination. But yeah, having that tie is cool.
That was Karma Code era as well, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
They put out all kinds of quirky stuff during the Karma Code era.
Yeah, that's one big era I kind of missed out on, like you were saying about affordability.
That
can be a very big problem when you've got a big range to choose from. And Karma Code was brilliant for merch, for variety of merch.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Much I didn't get at that time or couldn't get.
I think in terms of popularity. I wonder if that might have been the point where the Lacuna Coil were at their most popular. If you look at album sales, I think they're kind of reached a peak, and then we could talk about this in a different conversation, but I suspect that that Shallow Eye probably saw a bit of a new crowd, but a bit of a drop in the old crowd, because they definitely move away from their gothic rock, kind of roots into very much a classic rock kind of style. And I think that they lost some fans. But anyway, that's a different conversation. What else? So I could talk about the, from the same era, the Lacuna called Doormat. It's up there. It's in a really bad condition. So when I say, by the way, for those of you watching in black and white, I mean, for those of you listening rather than watching this, which is basically everybody that's not the three of us, I'm pointing at the top of my cupboard, a shelf's over there, and sitting on the top is a Lacuna called Doormat. The bizarrest thing, but when I saw that at a show, I thought, I've got to have it. And why wouldn't you? I've got to have it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think my second one is a set list. So I don't collect set lists. In fact, those of you who know me in shows know I'm probably the person most likely to give someone a set list, right? I'll pick a set list up. If it gets given to me, I'll give it to someone else. There are very few times where I go, I want a set list for myself. In fact, it's only really happened twice. I guess it could, if I could have got the set list from the first Lacuna Coil show I was at, that would have been amazing. But that was a long time ago. I got a set list from the 119 show, and I got a set list from the Gramercy in New York 2 years ago, where I saw Lacuna Coil on my birthday. Okay. And that was cool, because it's got happy birthday written all over it, which is nice. But the one that's on my wall is the 119 show set list signed.
And cool.
That to me, that day was special for so many reasons, not least of which is them opening with a Current Obsession, and doing that in London. So I've got, it's over there on my wall, signed. It's, happy anniversary, Mackie Rowe. I've got Fuck You from Andy, classic. And lots of love from Cree, signed, and it's all there. It's all, and that to me is a kind of a perfect memory bubble that I can dive into and remember that. So that's the second thing. The third thing, it's getting pretty hard now, I think. The third thing is someone hugely generously made me a Lacuna Coil logo out of Lego. All right, that person knows who he is, and it's sitting over there on my shelf. I think I only opened it once when I put it down and one of them fell off, so I put it back in his place and put it back over there. It's a collectible. It is unique. It was made. Thank you again, Dave, by the way. I'll never forget that you've made that, and it is absolutely delightful, and it's over there, and it's a really nice memory to have. So that's kind of my third thing, right? So and then of course it's all the laminates you get over the years, or the VIP ones, or the photos and stuff. They create an interesting collection, a bit like picks and sticks do, right? But I think for me it's the tie, it's the set list, it's the Lego logo with the band members around the bottom that Dave made for me, which was just amazing. That was at the 119 show, wasn't it? As I recall, it was definitely London. You gave it to me. Yeah, I'm
pretty... No, it was Black Anima.
Was it Black Anima? Okay.
Yeah, hence the Black Anima snake.
Yeah. Sorry. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Of course, yes. Lost track of that. Yeah, that was amazing. So, okay, what about quirky shit then? What have you got? So, Dave, you collect a lot of stuff.
I try to. There's so much historically I've missed out on. Mostly probably the Pharmacode era. So historically, I've got gaps in my completest collection, which would be an ideal.
Good luck with that, by the way.
A museum would be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like actually have a permanent museum with everything. But I think I'd have to raid both of your collections and to beef that up quite a bit.
Probably.
Quirky stuff. I don't know, actually. I think a lot of it is stuff I've made. So,
well, yeah, you made one for me. So, yeah,
the Lego stuff, most of which I give away. So I don't have an awful lot here myself, apart from the 119 stage show.
Remember it well. That was the first time I saw you render Lacuna Call in Lego when you did the exhibition.
That's right.
Birmingham.
Yes. The,
and you pointed me out at the start of the show with my camera, and I was like, no way.
Yeah. I've still got that in my cabinet behind me there.
Lovely.
About the only thing I've kept. So, yeah, self-creations, I think, perhaps the quirkiest. So one of my favourite, if you call it merch or collectibles, is the Black Animus suit that I made.
Yep.
For the, it was actually for Download Festival 22.
Yep, the white one.
Yes, the white one. So I painted the, as close as I could get it to their stage attire.
Mm-hmm. But reversed.
Purely to wear to Download to get it signed by all the coilers are there, organising a meetup for whoever could make it. And then I took it to the Coma Live event.
You did?
In Milan. And so it's got so many signatures and people, mostly coilers, but obviously all the band as well. And you know, some crew, fans that you would never otherwise see. It's like once in a lifetime meetings for a lot of those.
Yeah, for sure.
Really, really, really special.
I love that. It's such a personal thing that is unique because, as you say, there's such a great community around the band, and the Coma Live event in 22 was unique. Will we ever get a kind of a meeting like that again? I just don't know. But you'll probably not get the same people there.
Mm.
And you've essentially got a guest book in the form of a onesie that people have signed and, you know, personalized. And yeah, it's probably not quite as easy to store as a guest book, but you know, an interesting piece of
tissue. Also kind of dangerous because I can't see ever washing it. I think that would be
given that you've worn it
through every once in a while.
Given that you've worn it through two shows, I do wonder whether or not you feel the need to keep it outside. Because I'm sure it's got its own unique aroma. You could probably spray it with Stay Fast and then dry clean it, but I guess it's not a risk you're prepared to take, right? So
No, I'll just air it regularly.
Just hold it by the window and flap it.
Yeah.
That is pretty quirky, but you know, delightful. Anything else? What kind of things do you think you've owned that's just touches that quirkiness?
Soap. Soap was quirky. I love that.
I know. Have you ever used it though? Mine's still over there in a little box.
Yeah, I deliberately bought extra. So I've got one to keep, obviously. Yeah. And I bought one specifically to use so I could do a proper review. In fact, there's a video of me using it.
I probably won't link to that from the show notes for the sake of everybody's sanity. I've never used it either. Give me the 10-second pricey. Is it nice soap?
It is. It was very, very good quality, I have to say.
Well, it wasn't cheap, was it? It's about 15 euros or something. So.
Yeah, about 15
euros. Yeah, so, okay, good quality
soap. There's a soap out there that's far more expensive and not as good, though.
Fair enough. Okay. That's an interesting statement. All right. So, Lacuna Call soap. Mike, quirky stuff. What have you got?
I would say one thing was a drawing Mackie did when there was an earthquake in Emilia Romagna. So there was an online auction raising money, and I won the auction for that. So cool. That's a one of one drawing that he did. That's good. And something small and silly, I guess the Lacuna Call shot glass.
Yes.
It's very old now.
Ozfest.
Not many of them about, yeah.
I've got about five of them. They're all faded and just look like you'd never want to drink anything out of them. Yeah, they look like those shot glasses. Interesting. It's a shame they didn't. I feel like they could bring up some glass ones, some proper nice shot glasses rather than. Because they were like one-shot Jägermeister ones, weren't they? But they had the Lacuna Call logo on one side and Jägermeister on the other. Because like Ozfest, the whole thing was Jägermeister sponsored. I think I've still got some Lacuna Call Jägermeister books of matches, you know, the classic.
Oh, yeah.
Still got some of those in my box of delights. I think other quirky stuff, I mean, I've already talked about the doormat, which is the bizarrest, I think one of the bizarrest, if not the bizarrest bit of merchandise I ever bought at a Lacuna Core show. Just where that came from. I'd love to know where the... I know what we need. We need a doormat. That's what we need. We need a Lacuna Core doormat. What the fuck? So I don't know where that's come from.
That's got to be a connection somewhere down the line. So it's, I've got this mate who can print on doormats. Do you need anything doing?
I think I probably... That's got to be the only rational explanation, isn't it? I can get some doormats printed on the cheap. Let's do it and see what idiots will buy. Well, Matt will get one for sure, and I prove them right. I think one of the quirky ones, we talked about the shot glasses.
Mm.
The Shallow Life cocktail glass in plastic.
A HMV thing, wasn't it?
It was a HMV thing. I think I've got two of them. They're rattling around somewhere, and they're like these big kind of margarita kind of flat, like a champagne or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. I'm not really into cocktails, but a big flat thing, and it's got Shallow Life printed around the outside of it, and it's a stem glass, and it's probably about, I don't know, 6 to 8 inches high or whatever, 20 centimeters, something like that. And it's, I've never used it. It's just there.
Please say that again.
What are you triggered?
I have no idea. She triggers me, and I trigger her. We've got a hate relationship, me and her. It was... They're just really weird. And I don't know where they came from. I can see in the context of Shallow Life.
Mm.
But in all of this, we've kind of forgotten the dark adrenaline medicine box.
Oh, yeah.
Surely that's got to be up there as a pretty cool piece of memorabilia, right? And let's also not forget the Broken Crown Halo big album book that they brought out. You know, they've done some good stuff, to be fair.
Actually, you say about not remembering where certain things came from. I just remembered the nail varnish. I've got a little pot of branded black nail varnish. Do you know where that was from?
No, I do not.
No,
not a clue.
I don't think it's on sale at the merch booth. It was like a gimmick or a giveaway from something, but I'm not sure
where.
Could
well been, yeah. It feels to me like it might be something on the front of a Metal Hammer magazine once or something like that.
Yeah.
Or
could well have been.
Like kind of a Christmas special. Which brings us on to magazines. So they don't have much of a footprint in magazines these days, certainly not in the UK. I find it hard to buy magazines these days. I don't go out very often. The shops nearby, like the classic news agents, don't carry a lot of the big magazines. You're lucky if you get a Metal Hammer in a WH Smith these days. So some of the more obscure ones are really hard to come by.
Yeah.
But I do have a collection of magazines with Lacuna Core in it. Usually it's the specials where, you know, they've spent, there's a good 4 or 5 page article and they're on the front cover. Mm. If it's just not on the front cover and they're in an article, I've tended, just for space purposes, to tear the art, carefully work the article out of it by pulling the whole thing apart, throwing the rest away and then keeping the particular article in a binder. But if it's something with, you know, the band or Christina or whatever on the front, where, and it's a special, because, you know, Metal Hammer and a few others have done some really good Lacuna Core kind of specials in the past, I will keep them. Mike, do you keep magazines at all?
Yeah, I've got, like you say, from previous, I remember Terrorizer.
Yeah, they stiff you. Yeah.
Yeah, there's one definitely that springs to mind with Christina on the front. It's blue, and I've got that signed.
I know. Yeah,
yeah, I've got that signed a very, very long time ago. I keep anything like that, yeah. Mainly for the more heavier stuff, as you say, if they're on the front. I don't now. I don't even look now.
That one.
There we go. Yeah. Dave's
the only one I've got hold.
Dave's got it to hand.
Yeah, no, it's literally just in there in my drawer because it's the only one I've got intact. For some reason, I bought a spare copy because I found it online, I think, and I thought, oh, I'll have that because I don't have it, and then realised they have got it, but so it's kind of a spare, so it's never been touched.
Yeah, see, I'm like you. I've got quite a few of them. So, Dave, you saying that you cut all your magazines up? Then is that what you do?
Yeah, I've scrapbooked since I started buying magazines in '91.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay.
Since then, I've just clipped off. Hacked them to pieces and collated what was relevant to me at that particular time. So every single one of my scrapbooks, since essentially I started collecting music in earnest, is more of a history on myself. So it's almost like a journal.
So you don't have a Lacuna Course Crap, but you have a
not dedicated. No,
okay, that's interesting.
I've got ones that are more coil heavy in terms of content because of like, touring at the time or press for an album release or something. But no, they're mixed up through the years along with everything else. So I've essentially created my own magazines for
cool.
30, 40 year history.
Wow, I bet that's a really good thing to look through from time to time. And just think how much Pritstick you've gone through over the years.
Yes, yeah. It's a cost of fortune. Just
or is it Yoo-Hoo glue? Do you remember back in the day we used to get glue pots?
Yeah.
When it looked like it was cut off at an angle and the, and the glue would come through and it would have a spreader built into the nozzle.
And it was far too wet.
It was far too wet. It never glued. And after 6 months, the nozzle would start to perforate and crumble away or get stuck into one big lump. And it was never useful. And there was always a slit and you ended up taking a kitchen knife and sort of cutting the slit open again so you could use it. God, dear, back to school days.
Happy days.
Either that or copy decks with the plastic brush that, again, would never last beyond that. Oh, my God, we're talking about glue. Fascinating. I pegged you as the sort of person that would keep all the magazines. And I suppose technically you are, but I didn't peg you as a person that would be cutting them out and putting them into scrapbooks. And that's not a criticism. I think it's a fascinating thing to do.
It's the urge for creativity, I'm afraid. It overpowers the keeping things pristine.
No, I get it. Whereas mine's been the urge to not have my entire house become into a Lacuna Core museum. So therefore having to reduce space and just take things out of magazines because I'm very much about physical things, as you can probably tell from just the state of my house. I've always got loads of stuff. So digital things don't have much value to me. I think they're too nebulous. They can be, you know,
impersonal.
Yeah, all it takes is a delete command and it's gone, right? Yeah, you've got backups, but it's not quite the same. So I like the physical nature of things. And for me, the magazines is something that I want physically. If I had more wall space, I think that I would actually probably take the covers of a lot of the magazines and frame them and make a nice kind of magazine covers, because there have been some great, great covers. I think magazine covers, book covers, those kind of things. There is clearly an art involved in delivering an effective, powerful cover that tells the story. And there's some good ones. So, and it's the same with just there on my wall, I've got the recent, relatively recent comics, where Lacuna Call or the Batman comics, especially, etc. They're on my wall and it's all bunched together, but again, they could easily be framed. And
yeah, I've framed mine on the
Michael makes some nice ones as well. Yeah. Okay. We talked a lot about merchandise, and there's clearly, whether it's the 119 post, which is on my wall there, and I love that poster to death, absolutely adore it, you know, from the 119 day. I've got the Luca Comics, Lacuna Call 2018 poster there, signed by them, which I only really got from Luca Comics, and Mackie gave it to me. I've got a variety of different things, including the classic In a Reverie posters as well, you know. Which are like gold dust these days, and I've still got about 3 or 4 left. So if you're missing one, let me know. But what would you like? Okay, wish list. If you could get Lacuna Coil in the UK tour in October to bring drum along... aside from a drum head, all right? We know that. That's doable. Something, you know, if you could get them to do anything in terms of merchandise, what would it be?
Does 7-inch singles count?
Yeah, why not? Picture discs, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've raised this before, and it's something that I think it's something that would be popular.
Yep.
Because vinyl is popular at the moment.
Yep.
It's something special, but they've released, specifically because they've released standalone singles, they should be out on a 7-inch single format.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So if I can add anything, you'll think I would want those.
Yeah, like the what was it? Our Truth, Enjoy the Silence, those kind of things on picture discs. Yeah, like those. We didn't even talk about picture discs. I mean, I proudly display my Unleashed Memories picture disc up on the wall, and they're in a frame. Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of all the myriad of different splat coloured vinyls because I just can't afford them. You had, you know, like you end up paying 50 quid a piece and there's lots of them. So I've kind of given up on them, although I do look with a little bit of jealousy when I see people's, they've got theirs, like, oh yeah, I really wanted a silver version of that. That does look cool. So, but I've had to give up on that. But yeah, I'd love it if they did picture discs of all her albums in a box set. Proper Fulham pictures, but that's not the answer I've got in my head for what I want them on tour. Mike, what would you want them to do?
I think that it's the anniversary of In Her Every, isn't it, this year?
24th. Yeah, I guess it must be, 1999, yeah.
Yeah, so they whether they got anything in the pipeline, but they could bring something out old school for us people that have been around forever, I guess.
Yeah. I like the idea of that. For me, I've kind of got two. One's a bit of a, with vinyls becoming having a bit of a renaissance, I would really like a Lacuna Coil non-slip mat for my record player. You know, you get them, you know, some of the bigger bands have them. I'd really like one of those. That'd be a really nice thing to have, you know.
Yeah.
But I think what I actually want is what has been, what they've been talking about for a while. I really want them to bring out a Lacuna Coil wool knitted Christmas fugly jumper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, we got the Christmas sweatshirt, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. I wear that on Christmas Day. But give me a knitted Lacuna Coil.
Terrible one, yeah.
A fugly jumper. That's what I want. That'd be cool. Give me one of those. That'd be my ask. Merch. I'm sure we could talk for even more time than we've been talking already on merchandise and collectibles and stuff. And I'm sure we've not touched on a myriad of things that we've got and probably forgotten about or whatever. You know,
I think it's certainly a request, though. You know, use Discord and show us.
Yeah. Yeah. I one day, maybe soon, I will just walk around the house taking pictures and just post them all onto Discord and go, there you go. There's my collection, because I'm looking at stuff like there's the Lacuna Coil family portrait that Mackie drew. I've got something that Christina did. There's the Delirium drum head over there that I got on the UK tour. Not a drawn one, just a classic drum head. There's stuff around, right? Is this? Yeah, it's everywhere. It'd be good to. I will do that. It'd be good to see other people's as well. Cool. All right. Whew. There's a lot to put into Discord on collectibles, and I expect you to come back with me, guys, when we do it. Right, well, let's talk about the next song on Comalize XX, Aeon. I'm calling it Aeon because it's got an A at the front, and I know that Eon, E-O-N, is pronounced Eon, so I'm going to go with Aeon. It is, it's a song that I think surprised a few people when the album first came out. We first reviewed it in episode 43 of the Empty Spiral podcast. We actually included a interview with Mackie, or part of an interview with Mackie, where he talked about Aeon. So if you want to go back and listen to that, it was published on EmptySpiral.net on the 9th of November 2013. And it, you know, he talks about the skipping part and how that came about. It's only a short clip, but it gives you a view of what he thought of it at the time, or how it came about, I should say. So I think it's time that I started, because I normally just throw it straight at you guys to do one. Let me talk about Aeon. So I think when you think of Aeon, you think of a short song. So the original's 1 minute 56. Very much an intro or lead into Tightrope That Follows, right?
Yeah.
Broadly speaking, you've got the makeup of what feels like almost like an acoustic guitar sound. Do, 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 do. You know, the repeats and repeats and repeats. And then starts to skip. Something that caught a lot of people out, myself included, back when we first heard it, is it kind of stops and then starts and then stops and then starts. And it does feel like generally like it's the track is skipping. And then we get some Christina clean vocals where, you know, it's only a short, it's there's not even a chorus. It just feels like a verse of a song where she says, you know, there is something in your eyes, flowing them over, stealing harmony, which lives in me. Beautiful little number. Beautiful little track. Her vocals in the original, so very clean, so very beautiful, really highlights the clarity, highlights her a sort of a sensuality of her voice, really comes together really nicely. And then at the end of it, as it tails away, you start to get the build up of Tightrope. And assuming that you're playing it on CD or a vinyl or whatever, and you know, you're not listening to it digitally, which automatically inserts a 1 second gap between your songs, it naturally goes straight into it. So that was the original. That straight into Tightrope. Now we have this song. Slightly longer, 2 minutes, 4 seconds. This is darker, like really different to me. You've got that, you don't have the acoustic guitar sound. You have this darker opening. It's ominous. It feels like something from a movie. Okay. There's also this kind of computer vibe in it. Like you're in this sort of dark underground in this futuristic setting and there's blinking lights and, you know, there's something's going to jump out at you at the shadow, right? It feels absolutely cinematic. And it's the sort of thing that if you're watching a TV with the subtitles on it, it would having the bottom ominous music in brackets to tell you that this is playing. It's that kind of vibe. So different from the original. We get none of the guitars. And then we get Christina's vocals. We come into, which are kind of a more monotone. There's still the beauty in them, of course, but it's downplayed somewhat, sort of deeper in the mix. And again, it feels like, even though the words are very similar, if not the same, I think I'm 100% sure on that, they certainly feel very similar. There is something brooding about them, something underneath the covers here. There's something passively aggressive about them because of the way the music's built that up. There's so much in this 2 minutes of music, which is definitely divided into that ominous beginning, that dark theme about it, and then her vocals. Two very different interpretations of a similar kind of thing. There's no skipping, which I think is a really interesting decision. I guess in 2022, whenever music is digital, skipping would be strange. It wouldn't necessarily, you know, generate the level of mischief that it would have generated all those years ago when it was first released. There is a part of me that wish they kind of put a homage to that and maybe had some kind of digital quirk or it faded in and out or something, like your streaming service was stopping working or something like that. But at the same time, I think they went for a slightly different vibe here. And I kind of respect that they didn't, so I don't miss that part at all. I really like the new version, but there's one thing I think they missed out on. I think that they absolutely should have put more effort into making that final 10 seconds or so leading to Tightrope, because I think it's Aeon Now is definitely a separate song. It no longer feels like a leading to Tightrope, but I enjoyed the fact in the original it did feel like a leading to Tightrope, and I kind of wished that we'd had that build up rather than what feels like a kind of complete end before Tightrope then starts in the next track on the album. So yeah, this is totally different for me. I think this is probably the most different of all of the songs on the album so far. Like they've completely changed it. Okay. That's my thoughts. Mike, give me yours.
It's funny. Excuse me. It's funny what you've just mentioned and some of it, because it's exactly what I've written down in a lot of it. Dark, moody, atmospheric, like it's from Alien or Prometheus.
Yeah.
As a background to it. And I think that how it's worked is absolutely turned it on its head for all the right reasons. The way that she sings lower, it's got a Nordic, Celtic feel about it, but futuristic at the same time. and it still has the dreamlike element of the original. And I think that it's interesting how you say it's separate. Looks to me, it still leads into Tightrope, which is exactly what they do in the live shows now.
Mm, good.
That, and the build up into Tightrope, which is interesting how you think they're separate. I think they're still one leads into the other.
It didn't feel like it was quite as connected to me, but I'm really interested to hear it live again, actually.
The more I've seen it live, now I've seen it on these five shows, I could watch it for the rest of my life. Mm. I really think that the atmosphere and the lighting and how Cree's almost like a druid, how she's dressed and the atmosphere in it is, there's nothing that can compare to that, I don't think.
Wow,
in
cool.
a show setting, it's goosebumps time.
Nice.
Yeah. But I think overall, it's so different. It couldn't be any more different, could it, from the original as a piece? And I really like it.
Cool. Dave, your thoughts?
Well, you flummoxed me now because listening to both of your reviews, I'm not going to change my opinion, but I think you've opened my eyes a little bit more, and I'm wondering if I need to re-review this, perhaps.
Oh, really?
Maybe not now, but at a later time, because you've painted a lovely picture of it. The brutal part is I hate this. Okay.
Okay.
And I'll go into that, but hearing what you've just said, I have got doubts now. I'm thinking,
you're allowed to hate it. I want to hear why you hate it.
You're actually right. I wouldn't necessarily agree or have the same feeling, but I think you're both right in everything you've said. The one thing I'll pick out first is the cinematic, the film element. And what I've got written down is first Terminator movie. Because, same.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I think there's no doubt about that. But no, essentially, I think they've just ruined what could have been a song. Now, the original version was this quite misplaced on the album, beautiful little summer ditty.
Summer ditty. I would never describe it as a summer ditty. But anyway, okay. Yeah.
Struck me. It's those kind of the happy acoustic sounding guitars.
Yeah.
And they got with that guitar melody sort of coming around. It just sounded summery to me. Happy, light, breezy. That's the air that it gave off. And they've done away with that completely. My original thoughts were that it could have been fleshed out as a complete song in that style.
Mm-hmm. It definitely could have been.
And what they've done is the exact opposite. They've obliterated any semblance of happiness, any semblance of sunshine and, walking along a breezy riverbank with just happy thoughts going through your head, which is what I imagined on that original version. And all of a sudden you're thrust into some kind of Terminator world instead. So I think it's just shattered the whole concept for me. And they've done away with any song and instead turned it into just an elongated intro. And honestly, I can't connect with it in any way.
Fascinating.
The lyrics I find are utterly crowbarred in. They don't have any kind of flow or rhythm. I just really, really dislike what they've done.
Fair enough. But I don't think you're wrong. I think if we look at it through the context of they could have taken this summer ditty, not words I would use, but we'll run with it, and turned it into a fully fledged acoustic sounding song with this kind of ethereal Christina vibe, maybe put a bit of a chorus in there, something about timelessness, because clearly they're making reference to a kind of an eon of time or an aeon of time. He's got such beautiful lyrics, your hands are covering my tears. I mean, What a great line, right? What a great line, both ominous and beautiful at the same time, right? There's a sort of inner dance trying to seduce me, all of those kinds of things. You could easily, I say easily, I couldn't, I'm shit at that kind of stuff, but the Lacuna Call could, if they wanted to, turn that into a 3.5-4 minute song. But they chose not to. And I don't think you're wrong. If the intent was always, or if the desire, your anticipation was that they would turn that into a beautiful, ethereal song, then you're absolutely right. They've destroyed any notion of that. And I love how this has kind of gone in two directions. You do not need to be apologetic for hating what they've done. I think this in itself is a fascinating thing, where what is essentially a small part of a song, you know, a 2-minute section of what could have been a bigger song, almost like the draft of a song, right? You know, they had a verse, they had an intro, and they don't really carry it onto a chorus. The chorus is tightrope, right? And they could have built that into something completely different, but they chose not to. And what they did do is they darkened it. They really darkened it and made it much more ominous, and atmospheric. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Interesting fact, it was the first Lacuna Coil song I ever heard live. That is an interesting fact.
Yeah.
They opened with it as the acoustic set when they supported themselves on the 2005 tour.
Yes, they did, didn't they? Yes, they played this
a few times. And I have a bootleg recording of it, of that whole show. It's nice. Terrible quality, but fantastic.
Yeah, they also did it on the radio, didn't they, in America? I'm sure they did this. I remember Mouse, because they would use the acoustic guitar to keep the beat when you're like, boom, 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 boom. I remember that quite clearly. And when they would do some of their kind of off days in libraries and small community centres and stuff, it was quite the vibe back in, you know, back 10 years or 10 or 15 years ago. This would come up quite a lot as well, because it makes a really interesting little thing. I do think there's a lot of value in what you say, though. They could have gone a completely different way. They could have come out with a really interesting ethereal number. I suspect, though, that it wouldn't have worked on Caramelize XX.
No.
I don't think it would at all.
I think if they could... I think the what's the word I'm looking for? The travesty about Aeon is that it wasn't a fully fledged song in 2002.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That's the sad part, because it would have fit in beautifully, not been an extension of Tightrope or an intro to Tightrope. It would have found its own, you know, its own space.
Perhaps this is another reason to get the 7-inch single format, because they can do a B-side for it and rework Aeon again.
Yeah,
happy version.
Yeah, we want version 3 of Aeon, please. Yeah. Could you just give us version 3? Okay. Yeah, now that would be interesting, wouldn't it, if they did that? Absolutely interesting if they did that.
Mm.
What a fascinating interpretation that we each have. And I love the fact that you hate what they've done with it, and you wanted a different version of it. Because I'm guessing when we look at that across the whole album, I'm guessing that a lot of people have that view about Caramelize XX overall, that there are things that they did in Caramelize XX that weren't... the reason that someone enjoyed a particular song in the original album is something that they've lost in Caramelize XX.
Well, right. Heaven's Lie, people absolutely despise Heaven's Lie XX.
Well, I'm not one of them. I think it's amazing, by the way.
There are people out there that absolutely despise what they've done with Caramelize XX.
They were looking for something different. If they were looking for a recreation of Heaven's Lie, they were looking for something, maybe something that was focused on another aspect of the song that's been lost, or or reinforce something that they didn't like.
Yeah.
And I think Aeon is in this unique position where it always felt like the draft of a song. So Lacuna Coil could have gone in any one of a different number of ways with this one, probably more so than Heaven's Lie, because Heaven's Lie came with it the weight of its own history and its own identity, whereas Aeon had little or no identity, right? You know, very few people kind of went, oh, I'm just going to listen to a few Lacuna Coil songs and one of them's going to be Aeon.
But it was always the lead into Tightrope, wasn't it?
It was always a lead into Tightrope.
And so... I still feel it's exactly that. And that's probably why they did it.
I think that, Dave, you've got an absolutely fascinating view on Aeon. And I wonder how many people feel the same way. Yeah, amazing. All right, so here we go. This is going to be the fun one. All right, what do we prefer? What's our numbers? What do we think? So I'll start. In the original Inspire podcast, episode 43, Mike, you gave it an 8 out of 10. Russ gave it a 7 out of 10. I gave it an 8 out of 10. I like them both. And I think my 8 out of 10 for the original Aeon still stands. Okay, even though it's short, but also very sweet. I get a real completely different vibe from this one. Okay, I've used ominous far too many times in this conversation, but that's exactly what it is. The Terminator, I think you described it, Dave, or it absolutely feels that way. I really like this version. And I prefer this version at the moment to the original version, to the point that I would give this a 9 out of 10. I think it's delightful what they've done. No, delightful is the wrong word, because this is not a summer skippy number. This is a dark, ominous, very, very present interpretation of Aeon. And it feels like a kind of a look towards the future. And I don't mean that's necessarily a good thing. So that makes me reflect on a lot of things when I listen to it, even though it's only 2 minutes and 4 seconds long. I prefer Aeon XX at the moment, and we'll give it a 9 out of 10. Mike, you?
I can't get enough of it. And I think, well, that, as we know, there's some songs that are better suited live. This is both. And 9.5 for me. I think what they've done with it.
Wow, that's a big one.
And live especially, it's the lead in, the atmosphere, everything building up to Tightrope to lead into it, like it did originally on the album, and I can't get enough of it. I think it's fantastic.
There we go. All right, Dave, give us your final view on this song that you hate so much.
I think that my favourite version is the third version, which hasn't yet been written.
Brilliant. Okay. Yeah, I love it.
As far as a score, 2, because it's them.
We ever given it.
But I don't see this as a song at all whatsoever, and they've reverse engineered it to the point of, you know, pointlessness. So having said that, I am completely open to change my mind further down the line, particularly, Mike, because you were saying about in the live environment, which I've only ever seen at the Coma Live event, which was, you know, completely out of the blue. So I wasn't able to fully take it in and appreciate it. Yeah. So on the upcoming tour, assuming they'll play it, I'll see it a few times, hopefully, and I can reevaluate that situation. So how it lives within the live set. And I might be convinced to increase my score, but at the moment, 2.
Fair enough. Okay. 2 out of 10, 9.5 and 8. I don't think we've had such a diverse view on a single song ever in 160 episodes of the Empty Spiral podcast. And that's amazing. Well, thank you. No, I really, really appreciate it, because I think, as I said before, there is such diversity in how these things go when you recreate a song. And I'm sure you are reflecting the views of thousands of people out there across the world that have listened to either Comalize XX in its entirety or individual songs and gone, what the hell have you done with this song, Lacuna Call? What the hell have you done? So it's important that we recognize that the opinion of people that don't like something is equally important as the opinion of people that do like something. Because if we don't, then firstly, we're ostracizing a substantial percentage of people that overall love Lacuna Coil. And secondly, we're not kind of tackling those more tricky subjects. So I think it's important. So thank you very much. Absolutely respect your opinion. Clearly don't agree with it, but that's okay. We don't have to agree with each other for this to be a review or a podcast or whatever. Aeon, what can we say? 2 out of 10, 9.5. We've not been more diverse than that. I think Christina says it herself in the song when she says, "Feel the anomaly that which takes me." I think that's exactly what we've done right now. We felt that anomaly. Anyway, that's it. Aeon XX, a clearly divisive track on the album. Well, I think that brings us to a close this time on the Empty Spiral podcast. We've reached 160 episodes, which I don't know why, but that feels like a milestone. I don't know why 160 is not,
not 180.
Yeah, it's not 180, it's not 200, it's not 150, but it feels like a milestone to me. We'll get there. We'll get to 180 and 200 beyond. I'm absolutely sure of it. But Yeah, it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride, this one. I think we've had a really good discussion about collectibles and, of course, our review of Aeon, which I think was a surprise for all of us, which is always nice. Anybody who thinks this stuff is scripted, you are so wrong. You are absolutely so wrong. We're just chewing the cud. Another day it'll be over a pint of beer in a beer garden somewhere, right? But this is just who we are. So, yeah, it's been cool. Thank you so much, guys, for being part of this, for joining us today. I hope everybody out there in the podcast land enjoys what we're doing. If you do, do give us a like or a short review on iTunes. It does make a difference. I doubt we're going to be reaching thousands of viewers anytime soon. But don't be afraid to say what you like about it or what you don't like. Reach out to us. Tell us what you'd like to see. Or like not to see, I suppose, or I should say here. If there's stuff that you want us to do on the podcast, ideas that you've got, or even if you want to be on it as a fellow Lacuna Core fan, you're always welcome to talk us through your experiences of seeing the band live or the album, your favorite song, or when you got into them, all those kind of things. We absolutely adore hearing from fellow coilers, so don't be afraid to reach out to us. And if you want to do that, you can send us a note from the Empty Spiral website. You can join the Discord server and just, reach out to myself or Dave or Michael, comment even in the podcast channel and just say, "Hey, I really want to do this, guys. When can I be on?" And we'll find time to make that happen. But yeah, it's been a great time I've had today. Thank you so much, guys, for your time and for the effort you put into the podcast with me. It's been delightful. So without further ado, I'm going to leave it there and remind everybody to listen to more Lacuna Coil. Until next time, bye-bye.
Cheers, everyone.
Until next time.